Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective, early week edition. The NBA season is starting. Yay. Yay. I'm not ready for this in mid-October. I don't like it starting early. I like it starting in November. I don't like it starting now. Sorry if that makes me a curmudgeon. Just deal with it. We've got a very West Coast-oriented show today with two brand-new West Coasters, I might add. In Los Angeles Lakers beat writer, just moved to L.A., couldn't be happier, living in Venice Beach, Dave McMenamin. Dave, what's going on in Venice?
Be here. My apartment's still in boxes right now, but I can walk down the street, go to a store that you would believe to be a retail shop that sells sunglasses, yet it has a little coffee shop in the back, and you can sit there and answer your emails and, view the people walking down the street. So that'll be my plan when we're done with this podcast.
Do you put on a muscle shirt and go out and lift with the guys on
the beach? See, I would need muscles to make that happen, Brian. But, you know, I get to get away with jeans and a t-shirt 300 days a year, so it's pretty good.
That's true. The Lakers, unfortunately, do have road games. You have to come east in the winter. And brand new Golden State Warriors beat writer, fresh out from Chicago, liberated from the Bulls, in Oakland, California, Nick Friedell. Nicholas?
I'm living the dream, B. This is living the dream. Every day my mom sends me the screenshots of the weather from Chicago, which is now about 38 and rainy. And then she sends me the other one from Oakland that's 72 and sunny and one of those heart smiley face emojis. So that is my life every day. And I get to, instead of dealing with Tibbs and my old friend Fred Hoiberg, I deal with Steve Kerr.
I have to say, could there be a more of a giant transition from daily dealing with Tibbs to dealing with Steve Kerr? I defy you.
It is truly, truly incredible. And I'm sure that over the course of, you know, 7, 8, 9 months, that Steve cannot possibly be to the media and to the periphery people who may show up at a random practice every day. But I've never seen anything like it. Every day after practice, Steve just stands there and it's just shooting the breeze with whatever media members are there, happily, just having conversations about baseball. He's a huge Dodgers fan and having conversations about different issues that are popping up in the world. And my whole life, I've been getting tips to talk to the media. In general, most days, it's like pulling teeth. And then you got Fred, who's a really, really nice guy, but he didn't want to stand there and shoot the you-know-what with everybody hanging around. And here's Steve Kerr, who's just like, yeah, you know, I'm here. You want to talk about something? Great. He's not running to go anywhere or watch film or whatever it may be. I have really enjoyed my experience early. And every day I pinch myself to remind myself how lucky I am to be out here.
And what part of your body do you pinch when you pinch, Nick? I'm just curious.
Andrew, usually you an hear arm. These two usually California arm, boys? These two California boys just living the life. Isn't it just that they're so happy and it's so wonderful? Can you believe
it? I assume that when we check back in with them a month from now, they'll be like, oh, my God. I can't believe that I'm on this board. This is news all the time. There's news all the time. I don't know what to do. There's no second that I can have to myself. And then Dave will say the same thing. It's like, I thought that LeBron was a newsmaker in Cleveland, and this is like a whole different animal, and we need a dry spell in this season so we can catch our breath. I think that's what'll happen.
I don't think you know me very well, Andrew. You're not going to get me saying that.
So, now, Andrew, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Dave and Nick went to Syracuse together. And they've been known to, even though they're much older and more mature and total professionals now, they've been known to occasionally bring the old frat life back. I don't know anything, but I do believe you gentlemen were both in Las Vegas for a preseason game last week. On the job, naturally. I mean, absolutely. But what was that like?
every person I told that we were going to the Golden Steer, they started laughing because they thought exactly what Brian did. They're like, oh, that's a hell of a name for a club, man. And I was like, no, we just got some steaks. I mean, as far as our Vegas trips go, Mr. Windhurst, we pretty much held the form. We had a hell of a steak dinner. We went to the casino and proceeded to lose several hundred dollars. And then we said, all right, see you in the morning. Dave and I have been going out to Vegas for years and years. And most nights have hold a similar form. That's for sure.
Most impressive performance I saw by a human body in Vegas was Ray Ritter, allowing everyone in the media to actually get access to people the morning after our dinner in Vegas. The Warriors PR person. There was no other types of performances that I was being in awe of.
I see. So I did this. Can you tell about these two guys? I mean, this is these two guys. I hate to do this, but I have to talk about another podcast that I was on.
Did I did this make podcast news somewhere else?
No, I hope not. I hope not.
You didn't get aggregated, did you?
I really hope not. During the NFL season, it's a little bit safer. It was this gambling podcast with this pro gambler that I was on with. And they were going over it was like a snake draft sort of thing where we would pick our over-under bets for – it's at ESPN. It's with Doug Kazarian. I don't know the name of the podcast.
I was going to say, I hope you got clearance, B.
Anthony, what's the name of that podcast? Anthony's our
Behind
producer.
The Bets.
Behind the Bets. And so we did this, where basically me, the pro gambler, and Doug Kazarian, who essentially is a pro gambler, let's just be honest. He's our gambling guy.
Hell yeah, Doug.
He lived in Vegas for years and he never really ever left, even though he technically lives in Connecticut now. His spirit lives in Vegas. And so we like went through and made our picks like in a snake draft fashion, for over unders. By the way, my number one draft pick was the under on the Kings. It is a 26, and I would have considered going under if it was 16. guess who the last pick was? The 30th pick that nobody wanted to touch the over under.
The Warriors.
Lakers.
The Lakers at 47.5.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to touch that all the way down to the 30th pick. And it's just I believe that the Lakers are a playoff team this year. I just don't know how good they are. And they had a good week last week, I feel like, Dave. And Nick, you got to see him play twice, although I guess the second game in San Jose was kind of, they sort of rested people. But let's just tell me what you guys see in the Lakers right now. Should I have gone over or under the 47.5?
I think you should go under. I mean, we saw spots of them looking really good, and that was with LeBron playing 15 minutes a game. So when LeBron plays 35 minutes a game, they'll continue to look really good, and they'll be able to compete with.
What about when he plays 45 minutes a game?
Yeah. I think that only adds to the argument.
That's what happens with every coach, by the way. Maybe the Lakers will be better, but what has happened during LeBron's career, as he's had new coaches, and it's happened when he's gone to new teams, is that the new coach has like a plan. Oh yeah, we're gonna play LeBron 36 minutes. We're gonna hold him down to 38 minutes or whatever. And then the games, they realize how damn good LeBron is, and when the games are on the line, they can't bring themselves to take LeBron off the court. And like, next thing you know, it's 41. Next thing you know, it's 43. So we'll see how Luke Walton does. I know it's an older, smarter, wiser, more patient LeBron, but we'll see. But I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead, Dave.
No, you're fine. I mean, I think a couple of years ago, his plan with Ty Lue and the coaching staff and the training staff and Cleveland was once every 10 games or so, give him a game off. And it seems to me that will be the approach to take this year. Had a very casual conversation with LeBron, not explicitly talking about minutes or rest, but he was like, you know, every once in a while, just give me a day off. That's all I need. I'll recharge the batteries. I'm good. So I imagine that'll be the tact that they take.
So, but what do you think? I mean, how good are they after you saw them all these preseason games?
Brandon Ingram is a problem. He's a heck of a talented player who, in the style that they're trying to implement, fits it so well because he can turn a deflection or a long defensive rebound into a break that he's running. And he played starting point guard for them last year when Lonzo Ball had his knee issue. Already got those reps underneath his belt. Now has gone through a camp where he has someone like LeBron James empowering him to play that position. And so they're going to have lineups out there where there's three capable playmakers / ball handlers on the court. I know you've pushed back against the idea of LeBron continuing to run when it's the early season game and, you know, his interest wanes or his body aches because he's been through this so many times before. But so far, when they have committed to playing that style, they've looked quite good doing it. The three-point shooting is still a bit of an issue. Outside of LeBron hitting 40-footers, they haven't really shown anything that's impressed me on that end of the floor in terms of hitting from long, from deep. I know Zvi, the rookie, had a nice game in the preseason finale, but I don't expect him to really be part of the rotation. So there's, you know, that is still an issue. The center position, you know, JaVale McGee has done some good rebounding in traffic that I've liked and actually contested more shots than I think his reputation has been. At the same time, he's had gift-wrapped passes from Rajon Rondo under the rim that he's had fall off his stone hands, go out of bounds. So there's little things that you can pick apart, but I think you do with pretty much any team outside of the Warriors. And you have LeBron, who's motivated and on a mission, and you know they're a playoff team, and they should be. You know, why not? Why wouldn't you say they'd be in the 50 win range? Because you have these young players who are getting better.
Speaking of that 40-foot shot that he hit in Vegas the other day, I saw somebody, and I wish I could give credit or whatever, say, oh, he's going to make those all year long. No, he's not. You know why he's not going to make them all year long, Dave? Because he ain't going to take them. He's not going to take them because he cares about his field goal percentage too much.
3-point percentage, right.
LeBron is the king of the take the shot right after the buzzer because he doesn't want that charge on his – now, look, if it's a playoff game and they need the 3 points, he'll do it. But if it's, you know, 28-22 at the end of the first quarter, he's not taking the half-court shot. I know you think he will, but I'm telling you, he's not.
I am looking for it. Forward to a chance to actually talk to him about that because I do feel like he's shown, whether it's a preseason game and there's no consequence there, so maybe you're going to let it fly deeper. I think he's shown, I think that was maybe the third shot this preseason he took. I think he went 2 for 3 on just deeper shots. So I wonder if he worked on extending his range this offseason.
Well, it's one thing to take a shot with, you know, with 5 seconds on the shot clock where the ball's in his hands. It's another thing to take a shot that just is going to lower his shooting percentage at the end of a quarter. I'm just telling you, he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. He cares, but like, he cares too much about his stats. I'm sorry.
He also cares about what, but he also cares about what is grabbing the league's attention or whatever. You know, it's 3-point shooting league and his biggest nemesis are these guys who can shoot from the outside and not, you know, his bruising style isn't fully appreciated. Well, guess what? If he starts making it out there and, you know, just as deep as shots, he could get a modicum of respect that way back.
I think every long 3-pointer he takes is a win for the other team. Nick, what do you think about what you saw from the Lakers this week? Last week,
yes, they're going to the playoffs so long as LeBron stays relatively healthy. He's still too good, and he makes the rest of those guys around him too much better to think that they're just going to not find a way in. As far as the, with what, 47.5, my friends Waddle and Sylvie from ESPN 1000 Chicago, they play this game every week. Like it, love it, or steer clear of it. As far as what their favorite bets are, I would steer clear of that number.
Yeah, well, the professional gamblers steered clear of it. They didn't pick until 30th.
There you go.
They steered as clear as they possibly could.
There you go. And that tells you all you need to know because that number, you know, if they get hot and LeBron stays on the floor, okay, yeah, they could pass it. But if he goes down for a week or two or whatever and somebody else has an injury, that is going to be
not
right
really,
there.
It's not really a fair bet. The casinos are setting the line that high because they know that Laker fans will come in and bet the over.
Yeah, it's like trying to bet on the Cubs World Series every year.
Right, it's the same reason why the Lakers should really be like 30 to 1 to win the championship. I don't know, maybe more. But they're like, what, 8 to 1 or 9 to 1 or whatever?
Yeah.
Because the casinos can get away with putting the odds at whatever they want, and the Laker fans are going to come in and bet.
They're going to hammer it either way.
It's not a fair bet. If you're putting down money on the Lakers to win the championship, you should get more than 10 to 1. You should be getting way more than that.
Well, I'm with you on the championship discussion. But like, if we're going to say they're a playoff team, then you shouldn't have a problem saying you're going to be over 47.5 wins. Because that's what it takes to make the playoffs.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, though, that's not – I don't think if we got our analysts at ESPN together that they would have their computers spit out 47.5 as their probable win total. I think they would.
Ooh, that's a nice segue, Brian, because I pulled up ESPN's RPM projections for the year.
Yes.
That lists the Los Angeles Lakers' projected win total at 41.2 and 538's projections for the Lakers at 48 on the nose.
So wow, pretty wide. One time in my life, I agree with 538.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy, though? After watching all those games, guys, last week, I saw the Lakers twice. There were two things that struck me. One, having watched LeBron all these years from a distance, as good as the Lakers may be, and maybe they hit the over on the win total, it is still stunning to me watching this team and where he is at in his career right now and knowing that he's taking a redshirt year, because this team is not going to go to the Western Conference Finals. They're not going to win a title this year. It is not going to happen. They're not ready to have the pieces around him that you need in order to win. So all these years seeing LeBron in the finals, to see him on a team that isn't getting anywhere near the finals is still a little shocking, even a few months after that decision that he made to go to L.A. The second part, and Dave and I were sitting there in Vegas watching Steph Curry and Durant and LeBron go back and forth, and that crowd, which was – it was packed in T-Mobile Arena. That game and those games all year, the intensity level in those games between the Lakers and the Warriors will be the very best in the league so long as everybody stays healthy. It was at a different level the other night. Kevin Durant said after the game that it was special. It didn't feel like a preseason game. Fans were going nuts. From the Warriors' perspective, all they've talked about in the last couple weeks here is, yeah, you know, it's fine to see LeBron in a Lakers jersey, but those games at Staples will be insane. It's like the hype machine around those games will be crazy all year, and so long as everybody's still on the floor, they're going to raise their games over the course of an 82-game regular season to a much different level when those two teams see each other.
Dave, you are in tune with LeBron. There's been a warming of the LeBron-Kevin Durant relations recently. And there certainly was a warming the other night. What's going on there?
So it's interesting, Brian. Like, sometimes stuff is so in front of our face, and you're like, ah, it can't be that obvious, right? But it's like last year when, after the Cavs played the Lakers at Staples Center, the first time LeBron plays Lonzo, he finds him at center court and he's covering up his mouth with his jersey so people can't read his lips. You know, like, and it was like, okay, this can't be just, a flashing red light telling us that there's interest there. Guess what? It was. We saw that in retrospect. And the Kevin Durant thing, you know, they take an off day during the NBA season last year to film a commercial together.
It's pretty rare for two guys who had just met in the
How do we feel about their track that they recorded in 2011 finally becoming public? Where does that fit into the...
Kevin can say, he can go to his grave and say, in one aspect of my life, I was better than LeBron James.
He's better at a couple of aspects.
Well, but, I think Kevin Durant is a wonderful basketball player. That was a rib, but, I think him and LeBron are head and above anybody else in this league right now. But, I think then you look, they've been spotted coming out of dinners, and they were spotted during All-Star weekend. And, maybe when there's smoke, there's fire. I'm not saying that this means that Kevin Durant is coming to the Lakers, but I would also say in the same breath, if you don't believe that that's one of the scenarios that Kevin Durant is considering for next summer, then you're probably not looking at the full picture.
Well, LeBron, put in a call to Durant this year, right? Like, hey, would you think about coming to the Lakers? No, man, I can't do that right now. All right, cool. I'll see you out there on the road or whatever. Mm-hmm. He hasn't made his way onto the boat yet, but maybe that'll be for next summer. If you're LeBron, I've said that, Durant has outmaneuvered LeBron in a certain respect. LeBron was out. If you go back and look, the first, 18 or 20 times they played against each other, LeBron completely dominated Durant, dominated him on the court, in the win-loss, at least. They've actually, if you look at their career stats together, up against each other, they've averaged almost exactly the same numbers against each other, regardless of which team they've been on, whether LeBron's been on the Heat or the Cavs, whether Durant was on the Thunder or the Warriors. Their stats against each other are almost identical, all the way down to the shooting percentages. And not only almost identical, no matter what team they're on, they're almost identical to each other. LeBron always is going to average some more assists, just the way he plays, but they're almost identical. The big difference is the win-loss. LeBron completely dominated Durant, early in his career, basically throughout his entire Thunder years, including in the 2012 finals. And Durant made the move, and since that time, Durant has dominated LeBron. And
right, I hate to break it to you, had LeBron joined the Warriors in the summer 2016, that domination would continue on the win-loss side.
Right, but Durant did what he had to do to take over for LeBron. LeBron was the dominating force in the league.
Right, so what is that to say? In order to change that around, Kevin Durant had to join one of the greatest teams of all time.
I'm not putting a value judgment on what he did. The maneuver that he made, he outmaneuvered LeBron. He's holding the chain. LeBron was the guy who, over the course of, 4 years, won three finals MVPs. Who's held the last two finals MVPs? LeBron's not going to be holding the finals MVP this year. It may not be Durant, but I know it's not going to be LeBron, okay? So the way for LeBron to sort of undo that maneuver is to get – not only to go to a team that has more upward mobility, which is what I think he did with the Lakers. As Nick said, it may not be immediately upward, but the Lakers – growth over the next 3 years, their ceiling was higher than what the Cavs was. I don't know if it's higher than the Sixers, though. That's another topic that, down the line we'll see. LeBron never really considered it. I know there was a meeting, but, they were on the board. But anyway, beside the point, the way for LeBron to get to basically kill the Warriors demon is to get Durant off the team. No matter what happens, even if Durant goes to the Knicks, get Durant off the Warriors. So, if I'm LeBron and I'm having my recruiting missions, I'm recruiting against the Warriors as much as I'm recruiting to the Lakers. But, it's now the ball is in LeBron's court. He's got to make the move. And so he made his opening move. Now he's gone to the Lakers, and his next phase is to get Durant out of Golden State. And I don't care what anybody says, and I'm not saying that's what they're talking about when they're on the court or they're at dinner or they're texting or whatever, but that's what LeBron's got to do if he's going to ever get back to the top again.
Right, and the funny thing about that is that perhaps if we're going to do the power rankings of what LeBron and the Lakers should want to use that cap space for in summer 2019 – okay, Durant's one, and he should be one regardless of what team he plays for. But maybe Klay Thompson is number two, because
you have the same double bonus of you add a very good player to your team and you make the incumbent champion that much worse by taking him away.
I don't think Klay Thompson's going anywhere. I mean, I'm a big believer in you never cast anything in die, especially this far away from free agency, but Klay Thompson seems like a man who's ready to stay put. But you never know. That's true. I think even if Durant goes to to New York or somewhere else, Team X, just him, if he were to leave the Warriors, it would be a big win for the Lakers. And if whoever they get with that, cap space, slot, will obviously improve them, but.
It would be, I agree with you guys. Obviously that would be huge for the Lakers, but maybe I'm naive to this whole thing. I think that even if you take Kevin Durant off the Warriors next summer, if he decides for whatever reason that he goes somewhere other than Golden State and other than the Lakers, the Warriors still win the title a year from now.
I think they would be I think they would definitely have a chance to win the title. The thing about the Warriors that has just struck me so amazing over the last 2 years is their margin for error. They are in my 16 years covering the NBA, and I followed the NBA in the 90s. I wouldn't say I could do chapter and verse of like the 1993-94 season, but in my era following the NBA, they've had the largest margin for error of any team I've seen. And what I mean by that is they have an MVP in reserve. They have an MVP in reserve. You know, Steph Curry goes down the playoffs each of the last 2 years. They have an MVP right there. And so I absolutely think if Durant walks, that they retrofit or whatever. I'm not saying that they're not. They might even end up being the Vegas favorite to win the championship. But their margin for error will be dramatically reduced. And that's what LeBron's got to be focusing on. And I just think I implore you guys to continue to read the tea leaves and watch those Durant LeBron interactions this year, because I think this is going to be something that goes on the whole time.
Yeah, they'd also be trying to make it six straight finals at that point. I mean, and have they had to deal with a loss of LeBron? Excuse me, a loss of Durant plus. To continue that journey and care about it and get themselves in a mental state to make a run for a sixth straight time. At some point, even the Spurs, as great as they were as a program, you fall off and then you got to kind of reconfigure things.
Yeah, hey, in the short term, I'd add this real quick, having been around the Warriors throughout training camp, all those guys said that last year kind of became a slog at times. They were like, oh man, we know we got to turn it on once the playoffs start, but these regular season games are just meaningless. With the addition of Cousins, of DeMarcus Cousins, and he's around all the time. He's sitting on the bench. He's in the locker room. He's trying to get right after that Achilles injury. And with the fact that, and I don't think that the players are taking this lightly, the fact that it's the last year in Oakland, and it's the last year at Oracle Arena after being there 47 years until they go next season to San Francisco. I think that is giving this team a bunch of motivation for this run this year that they didn't have maybe at times last season.
Can I throw a flag on that? I saw your story. It was on the front page of ESPN yesterday that you wrote about the Warriors talking about that. You know, you're basically describing what they said. And I think, you know, Steve Kerr, you know, like where'd they go on their coach's retreat? Don't they always go someplace awesome?
Yeah, I think it was in Northern California somewhere. Yeah,
probably somewhere in Napa. So when they're at their coach's retreat, like, I don't think that they're sitting around going, hey, how should we guard the LeBron Ingram pick and roll? I think they're sitting around going, what can we do to come up with to light a fire under these guys' ass, you know? Who's got
keep
ideas?
Keep these guys going, right?
Right, because somebody in a playoff game. Oh, they're playing for their high school coach who passed away. I mean, I'm sure that they're motivated, and it's terrible they lost somebody, but it's the playoffs. They're playing to win no matter what. You know, the Warriors are playing to win the championship because it's a championship. It's not that they're going to be like, let's win it for Oakland. Let's win one more for Oakland. I know we've won, you know, three in the last 4 years. Those weren't for Oakland, even though we had the parades there. This one will be for Oakland. And you say next year, well, now that you're in San Francisco, do you want to win one? Yes, we're here to win one for San Francisco. This, you know, it's just a BS thing to say at the start of the season.
I understand.
All right, okay. I understand why he's doing it. Whatever you can sell to those guys.
I believe what the players have been saying in that regard, though. And again, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe it's all complete BS that once the playoffs start, the light goes on. Okay, fine. But I believe that these guys, after not finding a spark throughout much of last season, are going into this year going, okay, you know what? It would be cool to win one more in Oakland, and it's going to be really cool when Cousins gets back because, and this I believe completely, it's like players around the league and even more fans, they've forgotten how good DeMarcus Cousins can be when he's healthy. And that will be the reminder for everybody else that, oh, yeah, by the way, at some point in the second half of the season, here's this guy that can go off for 25, 12, and 5 whenever he seemingly wanted to in the past on this historic team. So the point I'm trying to make is that I think those storylines at least keep it fresher for this Warriors group than it was last season.
So I know Mark Spears from the Undefeated. He lives in the East Bay. I don't know if he lives in Oakland proper, but he lives in the East Bay. And he was telling us, I don't know if you guys were there when we were at our summit early in the season here, that the Warriors players are not crazy about moving to San Francisco because they all live in the East Bay and they like living there and they're not all crazy about ripping their lives up and moving, you know, I mean, you may say, oh, you know, poor multimillionaires, but I mean, think about it. I mean, if you're settled in a situation, I mean, look, if you get traded or you sign somewhere else, okay, you know, that's part of the game, but they're not crazy about moving over to San Francisco, and I know that Spears was talking about there's been some radical ideas, like there could be like a player's ferry that would ferry the players over, so they could still live in Oakland and not have to worry about bridge traffic, that there would be like they could drive their cars onto a ferry or something, or I don't know if they just, and they would ferry them from Oakland over to the Chase Center, because the Chase Center is right on the water. I do believe that they're going to miss playing in Oakland, if just not because they want to live in Oakland.
Hopefully they take over the color scheme so they can still assault the senses in San Francisco.
That's right. But, you know, it won't be the same. It won't be the same, Dave, because that arena – one part of the reason that the yellow works is because the arena is so tightly packed together. If it's spread way out, like
right.
If everybody at the United Center wore neon red, it wouldn't be the same. Like, I contend that, you know, the United Center, Nick – that's the biggest arena in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I think you could put the entire Oracle Arena, and I'm talking about the outer walls, you could drop it just inside the bowl. They would fit just inside the bowl at the United Center.
Yeah. Well,
think about the difference. Think about the difference in just the size. I'm not talking about how many seats, because there's 100 different ways to configure seats. Think about how tightly packed in the Oracle Arena is compared to an arena like the United Center.
Oracle Arena, for those who haven't had the experience of seeing a game there, and if you haven't, now is the time, because seeing yeah. Steph Curry literally get hot and knock down shots in that place is a pretty cool experience for any basketball fan. But Oracle is one of those old school arenas that we grew up with, in that there's a lower bowl and an upper bowl. And over time, there, you know, there's some suites in the middle, but not nearly as many as in these new age arenas all over the place. But that speaks to your point, B, is it is much more packed in than what you are used to seeing now. It was built a long time ago, and it doesn't have the amenities that so many of these other arenas have. And that's why they're going to this cash cow in San Francisco that's just going to print money in the back on top of seeing great basketball.
I mean, Dave and I have done this a million times. There's a tunnel at each end of the Oracle, and just inside the tunnel, I mean, 20 steps inside the tunnel, is a garage that opens to the outside. And like at the end of the night when they're unloading the arena or whatever, they open up both garages and you can stand in one garage and look into the tunnel, see both baskets and out the other tunnel on the other side. You could almost throw a baseball from one side to the other if you had a good arm. Try to do that at the United Center. You're not making it. You're not looking from one side to the other. So, anyway, so last week, guys, I went down to see, the Toronto Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
And
what city were they on the road there, Brian?
They were on
Where'd
the road. They were on the road in New Orleans.
Oh, the lovely city of New Orleans.
How'd that
treat you, Brian?
I was not even there for 24 hours.
Okay, all
right. The best New Orleans trips right there.
What he's not telling you, listeners, is that Brian, not a big fan of the city of New Orleans.
No, I enjoyed, I had dinner afterwards with a couple of league executives. And we went to a nice restaurant inside a nice hotel. Nice steak dinner, everything. And yeah, there were rats running around right by our table.
There it is. Okay.
So, look, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to say? Am I supposed to say that that didn't happen? Am I supposed to say it didn't happen?
You're supposed to have a nice hurricane and go forget about it.
Right. Yeah. There you go. I'm trying to illustrate.
I saw the Raptors play. By the way, they benched their top six guys that night, but that's not neither here nor there. And they still, by the way, the Pelicans played their full team, and they still beat them. And Anthony Davis had 35 and 15 in like 30 minutes. And if he had
my MVP pick.
Okay, let's just have a little diversion right there. I spent some time with Anthony Davis. There's a story going to be coming out this week. This guy is just in a different place right now. The way he's talking, I'm not sure it's going to matter for the Pelicans. I'm not saying that like he's leading the Pelicans to 60 wins and greatness. The way he is talking and the way he's seeing the game. So I kind of have this corny thing and I'm dating myself. Like you can't make Seinfeld references anymore on podcasts because the audience doesn't listen. Andrew Hahn, Anthony, can I get a ruling on the Matrix? Can I make a Matrix reference?
Yeah, I think Matrix is still in.
Still okay?
Yeah.
Because Anthony is a card-carrying millennial. In the Matrix, obviously, in the key scene, Neo basically has the moment where he realizes he's the you-know-what, and you can't be stopped. And occasionally, there are players who have this moment in their careers. I know exactly the moment it happened for LeBron. It happened for LeBron in game 5 of the 2007, conference finals against the Pistons. He was like, nope, I'm stopping the bullets. You cannot stop me. And I don't even know if it ever happens in a single moment or there's a series or whatever. Well, Anthony Davis had that moment last year, after DeMarcus blew his Achilles, there was a 5 or 6 game stretch where they like lost every game and he wasn't playing that well and he was kind of pouting. And then he kind of just had this moment where he was like, all right, I got to start playing better. I'm either going to be the guy or I'm not. And from that moment forward, I feel like he's had his Matrix moment. And it can't happen in your first or second year. I mean, and by the way, the guy has led the league in PER before. It's not like he was an average player. But the guy that he was over the last 2 months of the regular season last year and in the playoffs, and the guy that I am watching in the preseason, the way he is approaching the game, the way he is getting his teammates involved, the way he is showing leadership, the way he is just sort of controlling the game, Nick, I can see where you're coming from. If I made predictions, I might entertain it, but I don't.
So here's my follow-up to the MVP proclamation then. Do you think after having talked to him and watched him for at least that moment in time in New Orleans, that he wants to stay in New Orleans for the long haul? Because that seems to be the question hovering around Anthony Davis. Oh my gosh, this guy is awesome. Is he actually going to be there in a few years?
The Pelicans are petrified. And guess what? The Raptors are petrified about Kawhi Leonard. A veteran of watching LeBron leave teams, I can smell it like a bloodhound. They're petrified. They're both petrified. And they're excited about this season, of course. And, you know, he's under contract for a couple more years, too. But they're petrified. And that's unfortunately the reality of the NBA. And the owners tried to install this unbreakable amount of money where guys would not want to leave. But we've seen Paul George asked to be traded. We've seen Kyrie asked to be traded. Kawhi probably, if he had played this thing differently, could have been in position where he would have been able to get it. He asked to be traded. Now, John Wall and James Harden took it. It hasn't been a complete zero. Steph Curry, he barely had a free agency. He was so happy to take it. But it has, you know, it hasn't held guys in play. It's like, it's batting about 500. And Anthony Davis is an incredible test case because next summer they can offer him $235 million. And were he to not sign it, I think they would have to trade him. And if they trade him, it's going to cost him 70 some million, maybe 80 million, depending on where the cap falls. And a guy giving up $80 million to choose his next team is not something that the owners thought would happen. But of course, they're nervous about it. They're worried about it.
Brian, didn't he change agents this offseason?
He did. But no matter who was he changed agents, okay, because he was not happy that Giannis Antetokounmpo was getting better marketing, better endorsement deals than him at the end of the day. You know, I can be his agent, and if he says I want to go play for another team, I can demand a trade for him. I'll be glad to do that. He made an agent change over marketing, even if he has a long Nike deal. He doesn't need. He's going to get a max contract no matter where he goes. He changed agents because he wants better marketing. And you know he has reasons for that. Let's put it this way: I would not look to. I would not. Even if he had not changed agents, the Pelicans would still be worried. I think him changing agents is an indication that his focus is shifting. And I'm here to tell you that his focus has shifted and the Pelicans are going to benefit from it because, he is in a new place. And if he stays healthy, which has been an issue for him, oh my God, does he look so good and he's in great shape. He's beat, you know, the Pelicans play faster than just about anybody. That was one of the things that happened after the DeMarcus injury. They just doubled down and said, we're going to run faster. So they just fly up and down the court. And he's out there leading the break. He's out running everybody back else and he's going down there and dunking. And I mean, he told me, I'm not even worried about my point total because I'm going to get 8 points a night on breakaway layups because I just outrun everybody. And he's right. I think he's right.
So their win total is 45.5 on I just did a quick Google. So what do we think about that? I mean.
Yeah, they're
the way he's talking about him, he's the second coming of Jesus. So yeah, they should blow that out of the water, right?
Dave, you're making a good point. If your point is if you're going to be an MVP candidate and you're going to carry your team, you better have 53, 55 wins.
Well, because if it's going to be a statistical, you have to literally average triple-double to be in the conversation just based on statistics. So
You're right. If he is what I am saying he is, he's got to carry that team. Right. And by the way, they were not.
I can't go there. I don't think so.
They were not good in the preseason. They did not play well.
It will be Nico time soon enough, fellas. Nico time is coming.
Nico was great for them after the trade last year. Great for them. You know, I don't know. It may not.
But his buddy Rondo is with Dave now in L.A.
I know. I'm not denying any of
Rondo.
That. I know. I'm not. Look, I will say this. Elfrid Payton walking the ball up the court in Orlando. He can't shoot. Elfrid Payton running the ball up the court in New Orleans, he looks better running the ball up the court, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they replaced Rondo with Elfrid Payton. I mean, I'm not, I'm not like sitting here saying, oh yeah, watch out for the Pelicans. I agree. Dave's making a good point. If you're going to be an MVP, you have to elevate your team every single night. And, I don't know if he's there, but my God, does he look amazing.
As impressed as you are with Anthony Davis, as much you're talking about him right now, who was the player on the Raptors that really caught your eye?
My jaw hit the floor watching Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
Now, Zach Lowe, I'm not trying to say I'm the first person in this territory. Zach Lowe broke off Pascal Siakam Island. And Dave, you remember this guy as a rookie. He started for them. He would play power forward. They never threw him the ball. He'd be one of these guys who he would play, he'd play like the first 8 minutes of every half. Then he wouldn't play again. You'd never see him in the fourth quarter. And he'd maybe get two shots on like putbacks. And like, he was out there and occasionally he would like do an athletic thing. Like, okay, whatever. He didn't make an impression on me. Then last year, I was like, man, this guy's got some offensive ability. Like he was scoring a little bit. And I knew, Jackie McMullen wrote a brilliant profile of him, and his home country in Cameroon. And he lost his father. He's from the same village. I don't know if this village is underselling this place. He's from the same small community as Maba Mute. Cameroon's just turning out these players. He actually played when he was a kid, unlike Joel Embiid. He's got this remarkable backstory. He hasn't been home in like years on end, and he hasn't spent time with his family. But guys, he blew me away. He's out there playing, and I had heard from some scouts. I hadn't seen the Raptors play in the preseason yet, but I had heard from some scouts. Guys, he's out there playing like Draymond Green. He's out there picking balls off the rim, taking them all the way up the court, and going all the way to the rim. And I'm telling you, he went at Anthony Davis several times and scored on him. Now, Anthony Davis got him once or twice, blocked his shot. But then he gets down there, and sometimes, he can't get to the rim, so he just starts the offense. And he's out there switching on defense. He's out there, his outside shot is not there yet. I'm not going to say, but then again, neither is Draymond's. He looks like Draymond Green 2.0. He dropped my jaw with how well he looked. He blew me away. I just couldn't stop talking about it. I went to talk to him after the game and was like, dude, where'd you come from?
Didn't you read Jackie Mack's feature?
Well, no, I mean, I know his backstory, but I'm talking about his game.
Yeah, I know.
I go, Pascal, when you were a rookie, I almost said freshman, when you were a rookie, like, they didn't let you touch the ball. He's like, I know. It was probably a bad decision. He worked out in LA, all summer. He told me the name of his trainer, and I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head. I'd give him credit. And I'm not trying to sell the notion here that he's going to be the MVP. I'm just saying they have Kawhi and they have Kyle Lowry, and OG Anunoby, it was easy to forget that most of his rookie year, he was still getting back off the torn ACL he had at Indiana. By the end of his rookie year, he was a beast defensively. So OG Anunoby looks way better too. He is out there making plays. I'm telling you guys, they sat their top six players. Okay. They were playing on a stupid back-to-back where they had played the night before in Montreal. Okay?
Montreal to New Orleans.
Okay?
Back-to-back in the preseason? That's criminal.
Okay. It's one thing to have a back-to-back where you play, at Philadelphia and then you play at Washington or something.
The Wizards.
It's stupid in the preseason, but okay, whatever. Okay, but I was going to say that the Pelicans played their full unity. They had just gotten a couple of guys back from injury, and Alvin Gentry was like, I'm trying to treat this like a dress rehearsal, all right? I just want to I realize it was a preseason game. It's not my first year. I understand. The Raptors kicked their butt because Anunoby and Siakam are out there kicking ass against the real. And like I said, Anthony Davis had 35 and 15. Okay, one like he took the night off. You know, Drew Holiday was near a triple double. You know, like the Raptors are freaking good.
Okay, B, can the Raptors beat the Celtics?
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know if they will, because I don't know if it's hard to know where Kawhi is. I talked to Kawhi, and Kawhi.
How'd that go?
Made it. You know, it was incredibly insightful. He opened his soul. He told me everything about Popovich. He informed me why he was going to play next year. You know, he basically said, you know, I am not going to be the same guy that I was at the start of the season. I've got to have patience. And he said, I can't let everybody else's expectations of who I need to be affect me. So that was his way, I think, of saying, don't expect me to come out and be MVP Kawhi on October 17th. I think that was when they open. They get the Cavs at home the first night.
That's right.
And look out. Let me tell you something. Cavs, how about the poor Cavs? They start at Toronto, and then they go to Jimmy Butler's home opener in Minnesota. Ooh. That should be interesting.
Brian, this is a good segue because we're slowly running out of time, and we didn't talk about Jimmy and that whole thing at all.
I'm tired of it.
The practice? Where he goes into practice and yells at everyone? You're tired of that?
Can I just say, people yell at practice all the time.
Have interviews with Rachel set up right after that practice.
Well, that's a different that's a different topic. Now you brought up something different.
They also don't yell at people all the time after already requesting a trade after not having played basketball in three straight months. Come on, Brian. You can buy into why that was a story.
I know why it was a story. It was a story because Jimmy wanted it to be a story. Because Jimmy wanted to force a trade.
But Jimmy couldn't manufacture dominating that practice with third stringers. You can't make that up.
No.
As much as he wanted to get this story out there, the proof was in the pudding of what actually happened on the court that day.
The proof was in the pudding when they played in Milwaukee 2 days later and lost by 60. I know
that was when Jimmy
20.
That was when Jimmy had to work on his conditioning.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. On that, Nick.
It was so good. So, Tibbs. Oh, I love Tibbs, but out of all the insane stuff that comes out of that brain sometimes, the fact that he came out there in front of microphones and said Jimmy had to work on his conditioning. Jimmy could run laps around most of the guys on that team. So good.
It was 47. What was it? What was the score at the half? It was 83 to like 50, 49. I don't know. It was a 40-point game at half. Jimmy wants to force them to trade him. And I am not applauding the Wolves organization for how they've handled this. And I think Tibbs being on a different page with Glenn Taylor to me is not that big of a story. Owners are on different pages with their presidents and GMs all the time. The story is that Jimmy Butler told Rachel that he basically made it clear 3-4 months ago he wanted to be traded, and Tibbs basically didn't solve the problem or attempt to solve the problem, and he thought it would just go away. And that is a failure by Tibbs. That's not good leadership as a coach, in my opinion. And so the ownership has made the ground fertile for what Jimmy is saying. But getting all of that out of the way, I respect the Wolves for not, you know, giving in and doing something they didn't want to do. I respect the Wolves for not succumbing to Jimmy Butler's petulance, by trying to force a trade, by trying to be a constant thorn in the side, by either not showing up, demanding a trade, and then showing up and being a problem. And for the short term, it looks like Jimmy has stood down. I'm not saying he won't stand back up.
Right. I applaud your take there because it actually has some sense of history where we can't criticize the Cavs for how they handled the Kyrie Irving trade and then come back and criticize Minnesota. I mean, this is what a lot of Cavs fans and people around that team wanted the Cavs to do. And they would have said, guess what? You know, would Kyrie really gotten that knee surgery? Maybe. But when he's healthy, what's he going to do? He's going to play basketball. So
I am with you in terms of
having my problem with the Kyrie history. Trade was after they saw how bad Isaiah Thomas's hip was that they didn't back out and bag the whole trade. That's my problem with the Kyrie trade.
Well, just they, having the acquiescing the trade request to begin with,
well,
I think was
we. Well, yeah, but we all know Jimmy's going to get traded. We all know that in this league, when player demands to be traded, he typically is going to get traded. But you don't have to make the trade that the player wants, number one. And the Cavs didn't make the trade that Kyrie wanted. Ended up working out brilliantly for him, but the Celtics were not on his quote-unquote list. My problem was that the Cavs backed down to the Celtics and let them go through with a trade and got themselves damaged goods when they knew they were damaged. It's one thing. Sometimes the guy's damaged goods and you don't know.
Right.
But they knew, and they still went through the trade. That's my problem with that. But we don't need to rehash that old ground. I respect the Wolves for telling the Heat, we don't like this offer, and we have the asset. Tough turkey. Call us back when you want to meet our price. And I respect that, even though I'm not praising the entire Wolves organization. I'm praising them for standing their ground.
Here's the issue, though, guys. I think that there's so much speculation and there's been so many stories about this Jimmy standoff with the team. The issue to me from a broader standpoint is that Jimmy doesn't want to be there and he's not going to be there certainly a year from now. The Timberwolves are not very good. You take Jimmy Butler off that team, and you have Andrew Wiggins just starting a max deal, and Towns just inked his max deal extension. Ugh! I mean, that team without Jimmy is just not good. And you've invested all of these millions of dollars in two guys who just aren't what Tibbs and the rest of that organization thought they were going to be. But that's not an excuse
to make a deal for Jimmy that you don't like.
Understood. And your point is very well taken in that, B. But when you look at this roster, that's the thing that I think people are forgetting here. It's like, okay, well, you know, are they going to trade Jimmy? Are they not going to trade Jimmy? What are they going to get back? My point is broader. You have invested your future for the next few years in two guys who they just don't believe in that much. I mean, Towns much more so than Wiggins. Towns offensively is unbelievable, and if he gives the effort defensively that he could be one of those guys that you thought, all right, he's better than what he's shown, and maybe he can be a franchise leader for a while. But it never struck me being around that team all year last season that he was – universally well liked in the locker room, and certainly part of that was Jimmy's influence. But aside from that, Wiggins, forget him being a max player. He's not. Wiggins just isn't. He's not that good. Like, and you've invested all this money into a guy in Wiggins who's just not very good. So, if you're a Timberwolves fan, all these stories and standing up to Miami and not trading Jimmy, I understand that aspect of it. My point as you look ahead is your whole franchise is tied to two guys who certainly couldn't lead you into the postseason by themselves. So I think that Minnesota wants all of these stories clear on Jimmy and he goes wherever he goes. I think there's going to be a very rude awakening on what the future holds. And I think my man Tibbs, whether it happens during the year or later, he's gone too.
Nick, you were around when they did the extension for Wiggins last year. It took him a long time. There was the whole, you know, Glenn Taylor summoning him to a meeting and whatever. What would you have done about it if, and I'm not being condescending here. I'm genuinely curious. If you were the Wolves with Wiggins, what would you have done?
Well, the key for me is I hadn't seen him up close often enough. You know, they weren't going to keep Wiggins, LaVine, and Towns. They weren't all going to pay him. So LaVine goes.
But they'd made that decision already. They'd already traded LaVine.
So in that regard, you know, and that was Taylor's whole point. Of course, he said, well, I talked to Andrew and he said he'd get better basically and he would focus more. Having watched Wiggins last year, early on in that season last year, I was going, oh no, oh no. I like whatever step that he was supposed to take, that didn't happen. And I certainly don't expect it now. So what do you do in that one? Hindsight is always 20/20. You would have traded Wiggins. You would have said, all right, he's out. I don't know if you're Minnesota, how you could have believed, knowing what you already knew, that he was going to take some big next step. And the worst part is last year he regressed.
Hey, Dave, watch this. Ready, Dave?
Yeah.
Nick, who would you rather have? Andrew Wiggins and his contract or Zach LaVine and his contract?
I knew that was coming too. I could feel it. Right now, in this moment, I'd rather have LaVine because the money isn't as bad.
Oh, come on.
And the years aren't as bad. No, I'm serious. And I mean, LaVine, my feelings on LaVine are very well documented. Everybody knows, including Zach, that I wouldn't have given him $78 million over 4 years.
I can verify that Zach is aware of your feelings.
Oh, yeah, very aware. But look, knowing and seeing Wiggins and knowing that he's on a max deal, there were games, and the same thing happened with LaVine, but again, LaVine only has 4 years on his deal. There were games when I'd go watch the Timberwolves, and you'd look down and you'd be like, where is Wiggins? What is he doing? And he'd have like 9 points. And you're going, a max contract? I mean, yeah, when he plays Toronto or when he's revved up to play against some marquee team, he can turn it back and he can go get 25 or 30. And you're like, well, there it is. Why isn't it like this every night? And that, look, this ties into what Jimmy Butler's been saying all along. Where is it every night with those two guys? When you sign a max contract, when you are a max extension player, you bust your ass every single night. And you make a difference, even if you don't have it going from the offensive end. This is Jimmy's whole point. It's been his whole point for a year and a half now. With Towns and Wiggins especially, sometimes he just completely disappeared. But with Towns and Wiggins, there are way too many games where those two guys just are either going through the motions or they're not having any impact at all. And I don't care if you're sick of Jimmy yelling at you and Tibbs had a long practice and I kind of tuned him out. It doesn't matter. If you sign a max contract in this league, you bust your ass every night. And that is the biggest issue for Minnesota moving forward, no matter what happens with this Jimmy stuff, is that you've got two max players who don't give max effort every time they hit the floor.
But if I'm Andrew Wiggins, I'm looking at myself. I'm 23 years old. I've averaged 19.7 points per game in my career, close to 20 points per game before I could even barely, understand my butt from my elbow in this league.
Oh.
I'm getting better, despite what Nick Friedell says. And I've only missed one game in 4 years. So I'm not showing up. I've only missed one game. There's guys who take off the DNP rest. I'm showing up. I'm here ready to play. I'm young. I'm getting better. Invest in me. Write me off. How's that going to help anybody? And that's, to me, is like, yeah, maybe he doesn't take well to the old school type of talent. A guy like Jimmy Butler is like, well, I wasn't a top draft pick. I had to earn for what I, earn everything I got and blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Maybe Jimmy's alienating himself from what the league is today.
You could say Tibbs is doing that too. Is
Jimmy going to go on to some great success wherever he goes to? Is he going to lead that team to a championship? Is he going to be the best player on a championship team?
No, no.
Jimmy knows that who he is, and especially with the cap space that's out there, that he's going to get a max offer next year. And if he doesn't have to worry about alienating his team. This is what he's doing right now.
Shouldn't that be part of what, if we're going to be talking about to earn a max contract, you have to bust your butt every night. You have to show up, give that extra effort. Maybe also part of earning a max contract is that alienating the rest of your locker room.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, we've got to wrap, unfortunately. Han is, he's getting testy. Thanks,
Han
guys. we will have you gents back very soon, Hoop Collective. Enjoy your opening week of the season. Dave gets to go to Portland. You got ring night. Who's coming in for ring night? Is it the Thunder? I wonder if Russell Westbrook's going to play in that game. Ooh, let's find out. All right. Enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later in the week.